This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. Take a moment and picture this quaint family scene. A smiling toddler sits along a wide-eyed 8-year-old. Beside them, a dutiful teenage son flanked by 2 loving parents. And they're all gathered around a laptop. While that image may make some people recoil, tech researcher Alexandra Samuel argues that it should not. She conducted a 2-year study on how families maneuver the digital world and discovered that restricting kids' screen time is not only unrealistic, but even counterproductive. She wrote about her findings in the Atlantic article, Parents Reject Technology Shame. And Alexandra Samuel, welcome to the Word of Mouth.
Thanks so much for having me, Virginia.
So in the article, you make a really interesting comparison between those who completely ban screen time in the home to abstinence-only education. What are the parallels?
Well, you know, we've seen in now many decades of research over on the subject of sex ed that teaching kids only about abstinence actually leads, if anything, to higher rates of pregnancy. Because, you know, at the end of the day, sexuality is part of human existence, and kids need to be prepared for it. Well, you know, in this day and age, the internet is also part of human existence. And so when parents tightly limit screen time and keep their kids off of the internet as long as possible, really they're setting them up for a very analogous situation, which is that, you know, just as puberty is now, you know, often for kids the time that they start exploring their sexuality, it's also for kids who've been kept off the internet the first time they start exploring the online world. And, you know, if the first time you really start using the internet is when you're 13 or 14, you're probably not at a stage in life where you're going to listen to your parents a whole lot. And so if they haven't kind of bent your ear up until then and taught you how to use the internet responsibly, you're very likely to go online and make some poor decisions. And that's certainly what the data suggests.
So sort of like the kid who is not allowed to have sugar their whole life and then, you know, goes to a friend's house and gobbles it down.
Well, and it's hard to know. I mean, they're the data is a little ambiguous at this point, and I'm continuing to pore over it on the relative usage levels of kids whose internet access has been limited versus kids who've had more access at a younger age. But certainly, once they do get access, it seems like kids who've been kept offline are more likely to get into problematic patterns of behavior. So, for example, the thing I talked about in the Atlantic piece is I looked at the data on school-age kids who have engaged in a range of kind of problematic behaviors more than once or twice. I mean, the reality is, sadly, many, many kids stumble across online porn once or twice. But once your kids are kind of consistently looking at online porn, posting hostile comments, impersonating other people more than, you know, once or twice as an experimentation, that's when we see we've got a pattern of problematic behavior. And that kind of pattern is more likely to occur among children whose parents have strictly limited their access to the internet.
So when it comes to screen time allowance, you give us a kind of spectrum of how and where parents fall. Give us a little bit more detail on what that spectrum includes.
Yeah, well, I mean, this spectrum is really what drove the research, which began a few years ago with an observation that, you know, for all that we hear about free-range parents versus helicopter parents and attachment parents and, you know, French parenting styles versus tiger moms, I mean, boy, the media loves these stories of parenting wars. But certainly among the parents that I know, the most important division, certainly on a day-to-day basis, is the division in how parents approach screen time. And I see many, many parents who wholeheartedly embrace technology and give their kids access to, you know, Call of Duty and Halo. And at the opposite end of the extreme, I see parents who are very tightly limiting their kids' access to screens, possibly keeping them off devices altogether. In fact, the data bears out that division. We have about a third of parents who are what I call limiters. These are parents who focus on minimizing their kids' screen time and feel like the ideal is for their kids to spend as little time around technology as humanly possible. At the other end of the spectrum, we have parents I call enablers. They're another roughly third of parents, and their approach is, you know, I trust my kids' decision. I let my kids, you know, make their own decisions around technology. I defer to how other families and kids use technology. And I call those folks enablers. But it turns out that there is a middle group, again, a third of parents whose approach is to actively guide and manage their kids' use of technology. And these are folks I call mentors because they really see that in the internet age, part of the work of parenting is to teach your kids how to work and live online in a responsible way.
So you're not saying just let kids go free into the digital world, but more like that sort of image we started with, the family is there guiding kids. How much work does it take into being a digital mentor?
That's a terrific question. And, you know, again, one of the concerns I had initially was that mentorship might seem to be out of reach to many parents. But in fact, there are a great many people who mentor their kids online who are not in any way particularly tech savvy. What they are is open and curious about the internet and willing to talk to their kids directly about what it means to use the internet responsibly. They take an active role in researching what kinds of applications and tools their kids will find useful or educational or even appropriate. And essentially, instead of kind of standing on the sidelines and taking this attitude, which I think is not uncommon, which is that, oh, you know, kids understand technology better than us old people, they see that, no, you know, the internet is too big, too important, and too challenging for kids to navigate on their own. And so it's our responsibility as adults, as people with life experience, much more than tech experience, it's that human knowledge we have about what it means to engage respectfully, what it means to be compassionate. Those are the skills that we need to teach our kids to harness online, and it's our job as parents to help them understand what that means.
We all know people who limit the screen time for their kids. There are plenty of people who ban it altogether. We're speaking with Alexandra Samuel, a technology writer and researcher, about whether that's a good idea. So after taking that effort as a digital mentor, what are the results? What does your data say about how kids, guided by parents, use the internet?
Well, certainly they're much less likely to run into trouble, and you know, relatively few children of mentors end up consistently looking at porn, engaging in hostile conversations online, and so on. So there's just that risk avoidance piece. But I think the more exciting piece is the kind of skills and abilities that they acquire. So it's certainly the children of mentors are much more likely to know how to run a blog. They're much more likely to know how to set up a website. They're more likely to have learned some coding skills. And, you know, those kind of technical skills, when you get to the sort of high school stage, those are parts of the new literacy. If you want to be an empowered citizen of the internet, you need to be able to use the tools of that world. And thanks to the opportunities that mentor parents provide to their kids, those kids are much more likely to have those skills.
There are still, however, kids who have way too much screen time, spend too much time on the internet. So what do you think is ultimately worse, no restrictions at all or severe restrictions?
Certainly, a number of people have raised issues about the neurological impact of screens on very young children. And, you know, it's hard for me to see that a three-year-old is going to be, you know, harmed by keeping them off of iPhones and iPads and computers. It, you know, for me, the kind of concern is those in-between years, the elementary years where I think it actually is as problematic to keep kids off of screens as it is to give them too much screen time. And I think that's a challenging idea for a lot of parents. But what I worry about are these kids who reach the high school years without having had any parental guidance in what is a huge part of their lives. I mean, you know, we're horrified when we hear about these, you know, occasional horror stories of parents who keep their kids locked inside an apartment and, you know, the kids haven't made it into the outside world. Well, in some way, keeping your kid off the internet is analogous because they are going to live a huge portion of their lives in the online world. And who do you want preparing them for that? The teenagers they're hanging out with when they're 15 or you as their parent guiding them and introducing them to that space when they're in their school years?
I'm thinking about how we've heard this argument before. You know, first it was radio is going to rot your brain if you listen to those, you know, the Green Hornet show. Television will rot your brain. Video games will rot your brain. And we discover that it is not so simple or clear. But why do you think technology evokes that kind of fear in their parents that they would actually lock them in the metaphorical closet?
Well, you know, I think part of it is because we, as the parents of this generation, are kind of the last generation of parents who remember what it was like to grow up without screens ourselves. And so, you know, even though I myself am a total computer geek and love my internet, there is still a sense in which it's foreign to me, in which I still romanticize the kinds of childhood experiences I had, actually, among others, is Lake Sunapee as a kid, right? That kind of wild childhood so many of us have and which so many of us see our kids missing out on to some degree. And I think what technology does, particularly when it arrives as quickly as this move to the online world has arrived, it does change our social dynamics. It does change the way we learn. It does change the way we communicate. And it's very hard for us to acknowledge the possibility that different isn't necessarily worse. Like, maybe our kids will have shorter attention spans. Maybe they will be kids who digest and absorb information broadly instead of deeply. Is that worse? I don't know. I mean, I think we have to remain open to the possibility that our kids will learn and interact and experience the world in ways that are very different from the way we ourselves grew up. But we need to consider that their way might be just as good as our way. It will have different benefits and different drawbacks.
Well, Alexandra, I'm so glad that Lake Sunapee contributed to your well-rounded education. And thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Virginia.
Alexandra Samuel, she's a technology writer and researcher and author of the book Work Smarter with Social Media. You can find a link to read her article for The Atlantic, which is called Parents Reject Technology Shame. That's at our website, wordofmouthradio.org.